You know, when we come back with Dan Hurley, author of the book Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power, I want to talk with him a little bit about any experience he may have had or any research he has done where Alzheimer's patients are concerned. And for those of you who object to the name being pronounced Alzheimer's, it is a German name, yeah, yeah. Und, the Z is always a TS. Alzheimer's, because like an onion, not necessarily a glass one, but it's not a bad allegory. You'll find that some persons who are troubled by this disease can remember things from far back in their past, but virtually nothing from their immediate past. And it's been explained to me that it's because the brain is like an onion. There are many, many, many layers to it, and that's an old, old memory deep within those various layers of the brain onion. So we'll find out what Mr. Hurley has to say when we return, which will be shortly on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Dan Hurley, what about that? Has your research led you to any conclusions or any speculations on Alzheimer's?
Well, it's pretty hard once someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease to start turning that back, at least with these kinds of cognitive exercises. You know, it's hard to get some of these folks to be able to do some of these exercises. But I can tell you that the stage just before you actually get diagnosed as having Alzheimer's is called mild cognitive impairment. And a number of studies have found that these kinds of tasks and games can absolutely improve your abilities. You know, and it's not just working memory tasks and other computerized games that I describe in my book. It's also physical exercise is an incredible benefit for the mind. We've often heard, you know, a sound mind in a sound body, and the relationship between the body and mind is one that the ancients knew, and sometimes I think we've forgotten that in our modern age, where we seem to think that we're just going to sit on a computer all day while we're getting heavier and heavier, and forgetting that our brain does appear to be attached by the neck to the rest of the body, and so getting up and moving can have, as much as it helps your body, it can have incredible benefits for the mind, and that's at every age, but particularly for older adults who have really maybe forgotten what it means to get up and move around. There are all kinds of exercise classes that are specifically designed for older folks. There are gentle swimming classes, water exercise classes. Even someone who is, you know, just about physically disabled can really, really benefit. Also, picking up a musical instrument and trying to learn how to play the piano. You know, on the internet these days, you can get lessons perfectly free on YouTube to play any instrument, and you can go out and buy a ukulele for $35 probably, or you know, push the dust off that keyboard in the corner and get playing, and that is going to expand your intellectual abilities, because learning to play an instrument is a great way to work your mind. There's a very few other things that are as demanding on your attention and your the control of your attention as learning, you know, just for instance, you know, you're playing the bass part with your left hand and you're playing the treble part with your right hand on a piano. Doing those two things at it's really mental calisthenics. So definitely people who are older can really benefit from these kinds of things. Right up to, you know, even if you're having mild cognitive impairment and your friends are saying, John, what happened? Didn't you remember that thing we all agreed to and you said you'd be there and you forgot? If you can't find your keys, if you're really feeling like you're losing it, you're not remembering people's names anymore, these kinds of exercise that I describe in my book have been shown to help these folks.
I lost my sticky note that I had marked one of your pages with. I forgot where I put it. I think it just fell out. Maybe the dog ate it. That's it. The dog ate my sticky note.
The dog ate the sticky. Well, you know, sometimes people say that a working memory is like your mind's memo pad for what's going on right now. You know, and long-term memory, you know, even though older people might start forgetting details of, I mean, I know myself, I am less good at remembering the names of kids I went to school with and things like that from years and years ago. But that long-term memory is less important than your working memory right now. That is really, you know, being in the here and now is fundamental to, I mean, you know, every religion will talk about that. Every kind of psychotherapy will talk about that, that living in the here and now is where a lot of peace and also a lot of power in your life is. If you're living in yesterday, you're lost, really. And the ability to be in the here and now requires your attention, your focus, and it really requires some, you know, intellectual firepower. And you gotta, you know, bring up your game and get your game on, as it were. And that is what these kinds of games and approaches and methods can help people with. And that includes, like I said, physical exercise. It includes learning a new musical instrument. Sometimes people have tried mindfulness meditation, and which is not so different than silent prayer, but you're focusing on the here and now. And this ability to focus on the here and now and pay attention and keep track of things right now is really, that's where the big payoff is.
You know, it's interesting. This may be a sophomoric example, but I fancy myself a guitar player. Played it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I noticed that whenever I pick up a guitar, go to, you know, Guitar Center or Sam Ash or one of them, and pick one up and play it through a certain app, and somebody will say, "Hey, man, try this device." Depending on what guitar it is, or even on a keyboard, what plug-in they use or happens to be initiated will actually determine what kind of song you write. It's like, wow, that's kind of a cool sound right there. Let's do this. And it doesn't have to be just, you know, your usual chord progressions that are comfortable to play, that you practice by yourself and you wind up playing the same things over and over again just so your fingers can sort of remember where everything is. But I suppose this sort of goes to what you're saying. If you have a guitar and it just sounds like a guitar, but you can plug it into a computer apparatus and go, well, I want to make it sound like a harpsichord combined with vibes, then all of a sudden you go, wow, and you construct a song that is unlike anything you've constructed before, but it's because of the sound that you're getting out of this plug-in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had the same experience. I mean, I've been playing guitar since I was 13, and as the years have gone by, you know, basically I was opening up my Beatles songbook and playing the Beatles and playing the fun songs that I grew up with. And there's probably, you know, there's got to be millions of us who still like to play those songs that we used to play. Where I found a big benefit was I said, I'm going to stop doing this same old thing, and I'm going to try to learn to play the Renaissance lute. This is that little strange fat, looks like a fat guitar with a
teardrop
stubby,
shape.
Yeah, exactly. With that stubby fret board. And I had seen it played once one summer when I was in college. I took a semester abroad. I was in London, and I met a guy who played the Renaissance lute. And I kind of looked at him, and I thought, geez, I'm going to do that someday when I'm bald like that guy. But I never did. You know, I just kept playing my guitar. And when I finally... I bought a Renaissance lute. I got one as inexpensive as I could find, and I found an instructor, and I had to learn a new kind of tablature to read the music. And I had to suddenly, instead of just strumming along and playing those same old blues progressions and folk songs, suddenly I was playing like, you know, the kind of music that Shakespeare used to listen to. And I found it was just totally different. I was using my hands in new ways, controlling all my fingers at once. And it's really challenging. I mean, you can really get frustrated easily. But by taking these lessons, in a few months, I would play things, and I still do it. I would look at my hands doing these things and go, I can't believe I'm playing this. I can't believe it's, you know, I can actually learn how to do this. And that's really where the big payoff can come, doing new things. And in many ways, this is what many of these methods are all about, is pushing yourself to try something new and get out of your rut. And rather than just doing your same old crossword puzzle, playing the guitar the way you've always played it, and doing the same old, trying something new, which, when you think about it, when you were a kid, that's all you did. Everything was new back when you were a kid. And instead of just thinking back to that and going, oh, those were great days when life was exciting, yeah, that's because you were doing new things all the time and your mind was getting turned on. And you can do that right now. You can try these things. It seems like a big deal, seems a little scary. It's hard to break out, but it's actually really, really fun. It's inspiring. It's enlivening. And I had the, you know, the time of my life as when I was trying all these different methods. I really felt more alive than I had had in years. So this stuff is hard, but it's fun. And that's the best part, that you're growing your mind. And, you know, that's the way we're supposed to be. Life shouldn't be so easy that we're in such a rut. It's really boring when life is like that.
You know, it's interesting talking about playing instruments. It seems that one of the things, if you're going to stand on stage very long and play your guitar, first of all, if it's a Les Paul, it's going to be like playing a lawnmower because it weighs 10 pounds, but that's another story.
I've got a Les Paul.
Oh, man. I mean, it'll ruin your posture if you're not careful. You get guitar belly where you kind of stick it out to right. All the thing, you know, just you look terrible if you do it very long. But you have to really guard against tightening your arm. You have to keep it relaxed because as you go along, it really will become physical work. And you really do your best work when you just, I think that's why people have a, you know, one or two wines, maybe two, three wines over the course of the night, and they relax and just play. And it really sounds pretty good. Not just to them. It sounds good to the audience too, because they take the work out of it and just let their head do it. Your fingers know where those notes are, if you'll just get out of your own way.
Yep.
I remembered what's on the sticky note. What diagnostic instrument? Let me just pop back to finish your thought, and then I want to go back to the physiology of things for a second.
Sure.
Unless I've knocked it out of your head.
what is that? What diagnostic instrument?
determines blood flow. There's a passage in your book. I'm looking for it because I remembered what was on this, that there was a sticky note and what it was marking, but I can't find the spot right at the moment. And you said that
there's an fMRI, which is a functional fMRI, where they are looking at the flow of blood in your brain and the amount of oxygen in your brain. You know, what's really incredible is your brain uses up about 20% of the energy in your body. That little 3-pound thing in there between your ears is an energy hog, and you are literally using up glucose. You're using energy when you think. It is actual work. The neurons in your brain are just like muscles. They are. It requires energy for them to do their job, and so these MRIs are able to actually watch the changes from moment to moment in how much blood certain regions are using, how much oxygen is getting in there, which basically is showing, it's like a moving map of what part of your brain is doing what, and how efficient is it. Sometimes as you get smarter, your brain actually is using less energy to do the same mental calculations, and that will be a sign that you're, you know, like just as if literally no sweat, that you don't need to sweat it as much to do to lift the same cognitive load, as it were. So these devices are just incredible, and they've absolutely shown in with these fMRI studies that you will change the function and even the structure of your brain as you do these kinds of exercises and get smarter.
That's interesting. Now, and going back to that question I asked you earlier about mental work being harder than physical work, I mean, I think right. You just answered it. You're burning up sugars.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, advertisers will say, you know, when they're doing things, they don't want you to think. There's a lot of interests in this world that really don't want you to think. You know, if you remember that movie, The Matrix, there's a lot of corporate interests, a lot of government interests that would just as soon you sit back and follow instructions and don't ask too many questions. And so it can be hard to really awaken yourself and start thinking about the world and about your life and dealing with things and facing the problems that maybe you didn't want to face. But that is where life really gets fun, and life really is more worth living when you're handling things. And one thing I just wanted to say was that if you know, we talk about people with Alzheimer's and other problems, the military is using this stuff to help people. The Office of Naval Research is funding a lot of this research. IARPA, the Intelligence Advanced Research Agency, it's the intelligence agency's versions of DARPA, which does, you know, they did the kind of research that led to the creation of the internet, for instance. These departments of defense are deeply, deeply interested in this thing, because if you can help the diplomats and the intelligence analysts figure out what to do with all that data they're getting, you know, it's not just information that is going to solve problems. You've got to make sense of the information. And if the intelligence analysts had been able to figure out what was going on before 9/11, maybe they could have stopped it. They had piles and piles of information. They just weren't able to make sense of the signals that they were getting. And this is where this kind of training can just really change not just our life, our own personal lives. It can change our society, and you know, heaven knows our government could sure be a little smarter in the way they function.
Isn't that the truth? All right, when we come back, let's we're going to talk about a variety of subjects, not the least of which will be heredity, genetics, the war on the weak from the old days, the eugenics aspect of things. Is intelligence hereditary or not? This is Coast to Coast AM. Somebody just sent Roger just sent me an email about the Les Paul thing. His touring guitar, a 78 Les Paul Standard in tobacco brown, weighs close to 12 pounds. By contrast, his Gibson Historic Shop reissue 59 Flame Top Les Paul is a relative featherweight, just over 8 pounds. Yeah, but on a 4-hour gig, put muscles on you. It'll ruin your posture, but it'll put muscles on your triceps and biceps. All right, let's get through this little floating break real quick. We like to call it a floating break. We'll just float into it. And a delightful commercial or two awaits you. So freshen up your cup of tea and come right back. Dan Hurley is with us tonight. His book is Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power on Coast to Coast AM. Dan, has any of your research indicated anything that would account for, I mean, this is not necessarily about thinking, but I'm looking at a story out of Seattle. An elderly colorblind man sees color for the first time after falling and hitting himself on the head. And then we have that, of course, it's a fictitious story, of course, Back to the Future, where a bump on the head results in the invention of the flux capacitor. And then a story from last week, I believe it was, maybe the week before, about there was a warning coming out of the UK that too much television watching in children produces excessive amounts of the production of gray matter at the front of the brain. And yet, right here I'm seeing, in fact, about 6.7% of a person's fluid intelligence can be explained by the amount of gray matter or the overall volume of neurons in the brain. So how do you account for this? You know, it would seem like excess production of gray matter at the front might be okay, unless that's not a good spot for it to occur in. And then you have these, you know, people have these revelations all of a sudden. I mean, there have been reports of people who smack themselves on the head, and all of a sudden their IQ jumps up, you know, 20 points.
There's no question that things can happen. What we don't know about the brain, I write on neuroscience and neurology. This is my work. I routinely write for the American Academy of Neurology on their latest breaking studies. I write for the New York Times, the Washington Post, Discover Magazine, Wired, and the amount of what they don't know about the human brain and how it works is so vast. There's so many mysteries remaining that when scientists insist that they've got it all figured out and this is the limit of what you can do, and you're colorblind, you're never going to get better. I would not believe this stuff. Things can happen that can help you. I mean, 30 years ago, scientists insisted that the brain cells you were born with were the brain cells you had, and that was that, and you would never have another brain cell. And basically every time you had an alcoholic drink, oops, there go a million brain cells, right? We all used to hear that.
And you had some of the most genius people on earth like strong liquor.
Sure. Now it turns out that you are creating brain cells every day. Your brain is generating new brain cells. In fact, if your brain stopped doing that, you would not be able to learn anything new. You would not remember any new facts. This generation of new brain cells is how the brain recruits. It's like having a kindergarten class in your brain that are ready to absorb today's lessons, as it were. And if you don't have that class, you're not going to get the lessons. So now that's considered, everyone accepts that you develop new brain cells. So the revolutionary finding is that you can actually, if you use those, the new cells that you're generating, you can increase your firepower, as it were. You can actually get smarter and increase your abilities. And it, you know, you talk about seeing, going from being colorblind to being able to see colors. One of the scientists recently published tried to analyze all the predictors of longevity and health that they could look at. And one of the best ones, in fact, the one that was most closely related to longevity, it sounds very unlikely, is your ability to distinguish grades of shades of gray, very, very, very fine distinctions of shades of gray. So like if you're looking at, you know, is this darker than that by just a tiny, tiny bit, your ability to do that somehow, for reasons that scientists maybe are baffled by, is actually related to your longevity, okay, as you get older. Well, some of these kinds of training methods have been found to improve that ability to detect fine differences in the shades of gray, which seems incredible because that's vision. And how can you improve your vision just by training? Well, this kind of ability, these fine shadings, you can actually get better at, and that seems to be related not just to, you know, your intelligence, but your longevity. So these scientists are, you know, the things they're learning are really overthrowing so many old beliefs that, you know, things that we thought were true 30 years ago are looking more and more medieval every day.
How can we get hold of some of these and take them onto ourselves and improve the function of our brains? I mean, do we have to wait until they're sort of formally presented to us in the form of a program or something, or can we start working on it now?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these methods, you know, I describe them in my book, Smarter: The New Science of Building Brain Power. They're not so mysterious. These are not they're not impossible to find. That NBAC exercise that we were talking about earlier is available free online. You can go to soakyourhead.com and do that. Lumosity, the website that offers brain training. A lot of people have heard about it. It's advertised on TV and radio and everything. They have some really good exercises that are really useful. Some of it I'm not so sure about. Some of it might be marketing hocus pocus. But some of the exercises that they have on Lumosity, and I think it's $15 a month. I mean, it's not particularly expensive, and you can get free trials of it by going online. That stuff really can help. Physical exercise. This is something anybody can do just by taking a walk outside and improving your doing some simple strength training. You know, there are free classes, community programs that almost anyone can join. Learning a musical instrument, I mean, that is as close to free as you can get.
Sure.
If you can't, you know, you could walk into a thrift store and pick up some old used guitar, probably for you know, $3 if you get in there at the right time. And these things can really, really have an impact. Mindfulness meditation is another thing that costs absolutely nothing. All you're doing is sitting and quietly paying attention to the moment, paying attention to your breathing, just sitting there for 20 minutes, observing your breathing and ignoring everything else. And when when thoughts come into your mind, as they inevitably will, just letting those thoughts go by and trying to come back to thinking about your breathing. Do that for 20 minutes a day. Start doing that. You're going to find you're paying better attention. And that's what intelligence is all about, paying attention and keeping, you know, following the bouncing ball.
You know, a man in your position, anyone in your position who writes for these various publications and wants to bring forth quality information without getting into woo-woo land where it's like, woo, you know, that thing. I know you want to stick with, you don't want to go too far out on the clothesline to where it's like, oh, brother. But let me ask you something. I heard recently that sleep actually washes your brain. It just...
Absolutely. You know, scientists keep wondering, what the heck is the point of sleep? Why do, essentially, as far as they know, all living creatures sleep? Excuse me. Bees sleep. Ants sleep. Yep. Why do we sleep? And the peculiar thing about sleep, we all think, oh, gee, well, you're resting, right? But actually, if you've ever watched a person sleeping, they're moving around all night, right? And your brain is still working. You're dreaming. And dreaming, you would think, is harder than watching TV, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're just kind of spacing out watching TV, that's got to be easier than your mind creating a dream out of nothing. But actually, what they're now theorizing is that your brain is getting rid of the things it doesn't need. Excuse me. We've been talking here for almost 2 hours, John, so excuse my voice is cracking a bit. It's essentially the sleep is now being thought of as perhaps a housekeeping time for the brain to get rid of little toxins and all the byproducts that are generated as neurons are doing all their work. You know, when you're, it's almost as though as you're running around and taking care of things, your brain doesn't have time to get rid of all the junk it's accumulating, essentially like all the soot that builds up, as it were. And during sleep, then it can go, aha, now we'll take care of all this junk, the byproducts of all that brain work, and you know the actual chemical, biochemical debris from doing all that heavy lifting, as it were, and it's able to filter out these particles that it was not able to do when you were awake.
Okay, all right. Well, you ran off with my next question. That's very cool. Now, let me ask you this. What do you, and this is going to lead into something else. Golly, the time's just really going. And believe me, I understand what you mean about the voice. I at least have a little button I can push here when I have to let off a big cough, a big throat clear. So I sympathize. How do you account for, or how would one possibly account for people dreaming things that absolutely come to pass when they look at what they dreamed and what came to pass, and there was nothing in their immediate or even somewhat distant past that suggested their brains would produce this dream, let alone the effect of predicting the future? Mm-hmm. Has anybody got a finger on that?
I wish I knew. You know, one thing, I'll say it again. What the brain's power to intuit and understand things is just You know, the greatest supercomputer cannot come close to what we can do. Computers are great at adding up 1 + 1 = 2. What they can't figure out that we're good at is, you know, listening to somebody talking and not just understanding the words, but getting the point, reading between the lines, seeing where they're going, you know. And a child can do this, right? A two-year-old child can sit there and watch the parents talking about something and get a sense of what they're, you know, what's going on. Like if mommy and daddy are mad, that kid can really figure that out, right? And a supercomputer cannot do that, right? So the brain can, some of the greatest scientific puzzles have been solved in sleep. People have woken up with the answer to problems. Paul McCartney is said to have written one of his greatest songs yesterday on while he was asleep. He woke up with the tune in his mind, and it sounded so familiar to him, he was sure that he had heard it somewhere else. And he played it for people, and he was like, where have I heard this? And they said, I don't know. I've never heard that before. So the mind's ability to see where things are going and project forward is just vast. And I would not put anything I would never bet against the mind's ability to predict and project and make sense of the world. I mean, that's how human beings have done everything that we do, just by watching and observing and thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. What should we feed our brains? Obviously you got to have the proper omega-3s and so forth, but is there something we can do nutritionally? There's a huge concern over fluoride, which has been shown by a study at UCLA to retard the mental development in children, period, end of story. That's what their study concluded. And then of course you have chlorine, and you have all this stuff in the air, and now the genetically modified foods and so forth. What should we follow the ancient sage wisdom of the oldest cultures like China and Japan, or get away from the European diet altogether? Europeans have come across some amazing inventions and so forth, made huge leaps in technology. So, what is there anything to suggest what we should eat? I mean, I think the Germans are very much have always been proponents of cabbage consumption. Mm-hmm. And things like that, you know?
Well, I think one thing that we know is Americans generally are eating too much, right? So being unhealthy, being overweight, being obese is not going to help you. And probably putting away the Twinkies and even, you know, eating less of the healthy food is going to be a good thing, right? So we know that diabetes is like poison for your brain. So people that have diabetes are going to be having this high sugar level is really hurting your cognitive abilities. And people with diabetes are much more likely to develop Alzheimer's. And they're going to do it earlier. I don't mean to say that it's absolutely certain, but they're at higher risk. So anything you can do to bring down your sugar level and take care of your weight and your general well-being is going to be a really, really good thing for your mental abilities. Another thing, a lot of people might wonder if caffeine is just a quick stimulant, and might even be bad for you. In fact, caffeine seems to have really great properties, and people that a study just came out showing that a cup of coffee and the caffeine in it, a day later, your memory is better. So
really,
it's working for more than a full day after you drank it.
Excellent.
To help improve your abilities.
All right. Another fast hour, another one to go. So go get some caffeine, y'all, and come right back. Dan Herlier is our guest tonight. His book, Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. Couldn't we all use it? I know I could. This is Coast to Coast AM.